The Master was a film in production through the latter half of 2016. Unlike the critically acclaimed Paul Thomas Anderson film of the same name, this was a Chinese film, set to star Donnie Yen, the famed actor and martial arts expert from Hong Kong. Yen was also in line to produce the film through his Superhero Films, a production company he had established alongside his wife a few years prior. According to Alex Rittman of The Hollywood Reporter, who first broke this story, The Master had a budget somewhere between $60 and $70 million, and was going to start filming throughout Asia in November of 2016, before wrapping up in December of that year, when star Donnie Yen would have to begin a promotion circuit for the Star Wars film he was starring in. In the summer leading up to this shoot, multiple makeup artists from Europe, primarily the UK, began to receive inquiries from a woman working on the film, a woman named Li Duan Zhao, who referred to herself as Leslie. She represented herself as a production manager for the film, and was looking for skilled experts to work on The Master. In her inquiries, which began as emails but soon stretched out into lengthy phone calls, Leslie would claim that she was looking to avoid larger names, and was instead looking for what The Hollywood Reporter described as emerging talent. These were young artists looking for a big break, who Leslie claimed had come highly recommended by people they had worked with in the past. Dozens of makeup artists were directly contacted by this woman and people representing her, and were asked if they would be willing to work on the film. Many were, as they considered this a big break, a chance to make a name for themselves in the often cutthroat entertainment industry. For many, this was a chance to move on from lower-paying TV and independent film work to a full-scale movie production. It was a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity that would require these individuals to book passage to Indonesia, where they could meet a driver that would escort them to the filming location. Leslie, the intermediary that recruited many of these young artists, made sure to provide many legitimate-looking documents, PDFs of budgetary breakdowns, filming schedules, location shots, etc. She even shared an IMDb page with several big names attached, and concerned artists could look up the project online to see that Donnie Yen himself had announced it back in 2013, when he launched his production company. Everything seemed to look legitimate, and that facade caused many of these artists to pull the trigger and commit. Many men and women, fearing that they wouldn't get an opportunity like this again in their lifetime, bought a plane ticket to Jakarta and hopped on a flight. Once they arrived at the airport, they were met by a driver, having to provide them with approximately $1,200 in cash, which would soon change hands to a third party. They would then get caught up in Jakarta's infamous traffic, which would delay them for hours, putting them seriously behind schedule. In the days that followed, they would get put up in cheap-looking hotels as they struggled to make their way to the filming location. Dozens of makeup artists, photographers, and other lower-level crew members on film and TV projects would end up making this trip, but none of them would ever actually make it to a filming location. After being jerked around for hours, if not days, they would all eventually wisen up and realize that they were being taken for a ride, before deciding to eventually cut the cord, instead of sinking more money into a presumably lost venture. You see, the production of this entire film was a scam, as highlighted by Alex Rittman's October 2016 article in The Hollywood Reporter. This film had been announced by Donnie Yen when he launched his production banner back in 2013. But in the years since, that venture had folded, and The Master, what was once a real film project, was put on the back burner. However, that had not stopped someone from using this information to scam young artists out of thousands of dollars, by tricking them into traveling to a different nation, bilking them out of cash, and then stalling for time until they eventually gave up. Originally, the scheme primarily targeted young women, who, after a few hours of stalling, began to fear that something nefarious was going on, especially since they were being driven around by a stranger in a foreign nation with no end in sight, and were being coaxed along by a mysterious entity on the phone, the aforementioned Leslie, who it turns out operated under dozens of pseudonyms. Those involved in perpetuating this months-long endeavor would end up clearing tens of thousands of dollars, but even after being exposed by those that they had scammed, they would remain unidentified, with authorities being unable to launch investigations in foreign nations, especially since so few had been affected, and their net losses were rather insignificant when it came to international fraud. However, this scam would continue to evolve over time, with the mysterious person at the other end of the phone becoming known as the Con Queen of Hollywood. In February of 2018, more than a year later, Deadline began reporting on a continuation of this scam, which had evolved significantly. It was no longer targeting makeup artists in particular, but had expanded to other professions. Minor league Hollywood players who had established careers, but were looking to take the next step into larger projects. In this article, written by Mike Fleming Jr., it was revealed that numerous individuals were taken in by this scheme, including former military members who acted in or provided security for film and TV productions. One such case involved Andrew McLaren, a former Marine who had since become a security expert, in addition to starring in programs such as Discovery's Chrome Underground. He had been contacted by a woman claiming to be a high-level Hollywood executive, who wanted him to scout out filming locations in Indonesia and provide security. He would have to pay his own way while waiting for a 5-digit wire transfer, which would be delayed several times over before ultimately being cancelled. Another person affected, as reported by Deadline, was Mike Smith, a former stuntman turned stunt coordinator and second unit director who had worked on numerous film projects. Smith had been contacted by a woman claiming to be Gigi Pritzker, a billionaire and film producer who reportedly told him that Smith had been recommended through a producer he worked with on the film Nightcrawler. Smith was then offered his dream job, working as a director on a feature film with a large budget. While Smith was never scammed out of any money, his conversations with the scammer would begin to take a weird left turn into sexual territory, when the person on the other end of the phone began to attempt to solicit phone sex from him. That was when he knew that something was wrong, and began to suspect that she wasn't who she claimed to be. These are just two such examples of individuals deceived by this caller, who had supposedly swindled dozens of young and aspiring artists at this point, but was nowhere near finished developing this scheme. Months later, in July of 2018, Scott Johnson of The Hollywood Reporter would pen the definitive article about this story. Titled Hunting the Con Queen of Hollywood, this cover story not only gave a name to this nefarious scammer, but detailed the vast intricacy of their scheme, which had been carrying on for years at this point. Their scheme, which had been perpetrated by persons unknown, was centered around impersonating high-level Hollywood executives, primarily female producers and directors. Under this guise, they would lure in mostly young men, many of whom were former military, who had since become stuntmen, security experts, and actors, who were offered roles and jobs that they would consider dream gigs. Some others lured in by this scheme were entertainment professionals, such as photographers, artists, and makeup artists, others that worked in lower-paying film and TV roles. Oftentimes, these calls would come from intermediaries, well-known producers or executives that the individual did not directly know, but who claimed to have heard of them from people they had previously worked with. This was later determined to be information found via internet databases such as IMDb, which could be used to track what projects people had worked on previously and with whom. Masquerading as these intermediaries, the scammer would then get their victims in touch with these supposed high-level female executives. In reality, the scammer would just go on to impersonate these figures as well, which included Amy Pascal, Kathleen Kennedy, Stacy Snyder, Sherry Lansing, Leslie Linka Glatter, and Gigi Pritzker. Whoever they were, they seemed to have a good knowledge of these women, referencing their spouses and personal lives with ease, and seemed to have a working knowledge of their professional lives as well. On multiple occasions, while impersonating film producer Amy Pascal, this scammer referenced her ongoing saga following her break with Sony Pictures. This scam artist had definitely done their research and had carefully crafted email addresses and websites to direct their victims to. They were able to slip into accents and dialects at will, and spoke to their victims several times a day, often staying on the phone for hours at a time. They knew what buttons to push to get people on their side, and were able to come up with intricate excuses on the fly when things did not work out, such as failed wire transfers and a lack of repayment, both of which were integral parts of their scheme. This individual had also had the foresight to get their victims to sign non-disclosure agreements at the onset of their communication, using the cover of these NDAs to further coerce their victims, since they did not believe that they could discuss the projects with their loved ones or confidants without breaching the agreement. This added a sense of maliciousness to these relationships, which the scammer undoubtedly used to twist the screws, threatening to ruin anyone that pushed back against their demands. In a town like Hollywood, which ran on reputation, that had the potential to make or break someone's entire career, and this scammer undoubtedly used that to their advantage. In at least one case, the scammer had so expertly manipulated one young man, a freelance photographer in his late 20s, that he ended up draining his life savings on a wild goose chase that never panned out. But even after draining this young man's life savings, which he had obtained after years of working in conflict zones throughout the world, this scammer continued to harass him, demeaning and verbally abusing him simply because they seemed to enjoy it. By the time many of these young men broke and decided to directly contact the offices of these Hollywood executives, they discovered that they had fallen prey to a scammer who had been so calculated and crafty in their work that they had ensnared dozens of others, if not hundreds, in an identical scheme, netting them hundreds of thousands of dollars. In return, the Hollywood executives began reaching out to security experts, with several of them eventually hiring the private firm K2 Intelligence to investigate the matter. Following the publication of this article in The Hollywood Reporter in July of 2018, investigations would be launched by both the FBI and the NYPD, who began focusing their efforts on separate jurisdictions. The FBI's investigation was spanning multiple continents, while the NYPD began investigating a specific scammer, possibly a male, that had been disguising their voice to sound feminine. The identity of this scam's main culprit, the individual that is believed to speak to all of the victims over the phone, remains of the utmost interest to investigators. They believe that by tracking down this person, they could bring down the entire scam, as this individual is undoubtedly its main proponent. Originally, it was believed that this person was a woman, due to the way that they spoke and the roles that they typically took on, those of dominant female figures in the entertainment industry. I'll let you hear this person's voice for yourself, as several clips have been shared online of this person in conversation with their victims, whose voices are distorted to protect them. These two clips are dated back to 2015 and 2016 respectively, when this scheme was primarily targeted at makeup artists in the UK. In this first clip, the scammer was pretending to be a female executive and uses an American accent to berate an artist for missing a flight.
To be very blunt with you, when I travel internationally, I use this number. This number can be reached. It's registered 10 years ago, okay? So what I'm saying is that if he was abandoned, I could have just put my phone off, even though it's registered, and not pick it up in LA.
He checked out and there was no private jet. There was supposed to be a jet and there wasn't one.
He was at a local terminal. So that area was a local airline that serviced local routes. So what he would do was wait there and someone would take him with a shuttle to the private hangar. That information was not given to him until he was there, and I got that information and I told him that. So he can't make an assumption there was no private jet. It's a shared private charter, so it's a flight where there's only 9 to 10 people in that flight.
In this second clip, this individual dons an English accent to speak down to the agent of a hairstylist, someone that had actually followed through with a trip to Indonesia.
And what you're talking about, another makeup artist in Southeast Asia, and call the authorities because she's not safe. I don't understand that email.
What we'd like to know is where's our money and why haven't you been in touch with us since he was out in Jakarta?
When called us, and you would have to give us a chance to speak as well, called us. We contacted her. We had an appointment. She ran away from the hotel and she went to the airport without informing, and we'd already gone halfway. And had already sent an email which was stating that she had already gone.
In all of this, the payment that you reported and gave us a copy of the transfer, the money has never hit our account. So, you know, what's gone wrong there?
Look, can you ask that to my finance? I will talk to her. Because in the meantime, last time, there was no contact on why you disappeared.
We didn't disappear. We were there the whole time, out in the driving around in the bush for 3 days, and nobody made contact with her.
In the wake of their 2018 cover story, The Hollywood Reporter would recruit two separate linguists to examine the voice. One, a language instructor from UCLA, would state that the speaker was likely female, and the other, a forensic linguist from Delaware, believed that the speaker was born in or lived in Asia. Carol Chosky, the forensic linguist from Delaware, who heads the Institute for Linguistic Evidence, spoke to THR reporter Scott Johnson for his follow-up article, stating, quote, "The accent sounds to me like Asian English, possibly from Malaysia, Indonesia, or the Philippines. The traces of British accent could be due to age, with the person having been educated in a British-dominant country before the 1990s, when American English became more common in schools in Asia, or it could be due to having lived in the UK." Now, we're going to pause for just a moment to hear a word from today's sponsor. This episode of Unresolved is brought to you by the mobile game Best Fiends. One of the things I love about true crime, and learning about mysteries in general, is that the further you dig into a story, the more layers you uncover. That's part of what I love about the puzzle game Best Fiends. Reaching each new level feels like uncovering a new layer in a story, one you get to take part in. And the best part is, the longer you play, the more exciting it gets. Best Fiends is a game that does not require internet to play, so it can be played virtually anywhere. Even in a time of self-isolation, it's nice to have something that doesn't require a plug-in, and can be played in my office, on the couch, or even in the backyard while having a drink. Best Fiends has thousands of levels already, with new events and characters added every month. With over 100 million downloads and tons of 5-star reviews, Best Fiends is a must-play. Download Best Fiends for free on the Apple App Store or through Google Play. And just remember, that's Best Friends without the R. Best Fiends. Now, let's return to the show. In early 2019, it was reported by BuzzFeed News that this scam had started to expand even further, moving out from those directly involved in the entertainment industry to those with relatively high profiles. This included, in particular, photographers with significant social media followings, especially those that posted a lot of travel pictures on Instagram and similar sites. In an article published in January of last year, 2019, BuzzFeed News reporter Tanya Chen reported that numerous people had been lured in by a plot almost identical to the one reported by The Hollywood Reporter and Deadline the year prior. However, due to those in Hollywood having been warned of this scheme months prior, the scammers had likely moved on to separate industries, including one that wasn't protected by agents or management, where the victims could be contacted directly by the scammers without any kind of organizational filter. One of the victims was Carly Rudd, a photographer that had approximately 60,000 followers on Instagram. In January of 2019, she was contacted by someone claiming to be Wendy Dang Murdoch, a Chinese-born investor that had once been married to media tycoon Rupert Murdoch. The scammer claimed to be working on a project for the 2022 Winter Olympics being held in Beijing, and was hiring photographers to travel to Asia to shoot several locations for an extensive exhibit. Even though Rudd was initially suspicious, she was ultimately taken in by an almost identical scheme. She was flown to Jakarta, where she met a sketchy driver at the airport, to whom she handed over roughly $1,400 in cash, which was soon handed over to a third party at a gas station. She was then stalled in traffic for hours, before arriving at a pre-booked hotel. What would follow were days of whirlwind travel and roadblocks, in which a series of setbacks would lead Rudd to the crummy realization that she had been conned. Carly Rudd would later publish the details of this scam in a blog on her website, in which she uploaded scanned images of the legitimate-looking documents provided by the scammer, as well as a picture of the driver who had met her at the airport. Unfortunately, none of this seems to have deterred the scammer in any measurable way. In July of 2019, the FBI would announce that they were officially investigating this case of widespread fraud, and in a press release, disclosed that they were looking for additional victims of this scheme that had ensnared writers, stunt people, makeup artists, security providers, and photographers. Additionally, the Bureau released an online questionnaire, which you can find by visiting fbi.gov/IndonesiaShowbizScam, which victims can fill out and send in. Investigators were hoping to use this information to fill in gaps in their timeline, which by now dated back to 2013, roughly 3 years before the Master Scheme, which I detailed in the episode introduction. It was estimated that around 100 victims had been identified at this point, each having lost anywhere between $3,000 and $150,000. But it was theorized that the true number of victims could be three times as high. Within days of this announcement from the FBI, Scott Johnson of The Hollywood Reporter would release another follow-up article, in which he reported that the entertainment angle of this scheme had been carrying on ever since his original cover story was published, but had begun to transition to something else entirely. This scammer had continued to impersonate high-level female executives, among them Victoria Alonso and Sarah Finn, who both worked at Marvel, and was apparently using their names to coerce young men into engaging in phone sex for seemingly no financial motive. This provided a weird angle for investigators to follow up on, as it was now believed that this mysterious caller might be getting some kind of sexual gratification out of fooling people. Under the guise of being a female executive that was, quote-unquote, auditioning young men over the phone to get them to say and do improper things, this bizarre grift had started to increase in frequency throughout 2019 and seemed to have no sign of stopping anytime soon. The following month, it was reported that the scammer had started to impersonate several male executives in the film and TV industry, including comic book writer turned producer Geoff Johns. Using these names and identities, they had begun to lure in other stuntmen and performers. That same month, August, Vanity Fair reporter Julie Miller would publish a comprehensive article about the story, in which she expanded upon certain aspects of it. This included the lengths to which this caller would go to hoodwink their victims, weeks if not months of contact, through emails and lengthy phone calls, extensive document forgeries, and fake wire transfers, as well as learning a comprehensive knowledge of Hollywood's power players and most, if not all, of their past and present projects. In that article, Miller also reported that producer Deborah Snyder had become a recent victim of impersonation by the scammer, who not only sexually harassed numerous security experts, but alleged domestic abuse by Deborah's husband, Zach, the director of 300 and Man of Steel. This allegation was patently false, but had the potential to create ripple effects in gossip-heavy Tinseltown. This is still very much an ongoing saga, with some of the recent developments coming just weeks ago, as of April 2020. A lot of the speculation about this story has been centered around the mysterious caller, the person at the other end of the phone, who seems to have spoken with almost everyone directly affected by this scheme. It is believed that one person has been behind the dozens of impersonations that led to hundreds of people being deceived. Even though the scammer often uses English and American accents, experts have picked up on slight markers in their voice that point to them being of Asian ancestry. Because of the location of this scheme, which is centered around Jakarta, they likely live in Indonesia, as that's the only place that victims have ever been sent to and where the money is exchanged. Investigators deem it likely that the scammer has children, as they have had to silence them during phone calls with potential victims. It's also possible that they have worked as a makeup artist in the past, due to the scam originating among artists in the UK throughout 2015 and 2016. Earlier incarnations of the scam have been dated as far back as 2013, but details of that have not been publicly disclosed as of yet. While a lot of the early reporting in this case identifies the caller as a female, hence the nickname the Con Queen of Hollywood, it has been reported recently that the caller may in fact be male, due to their cadence of voice when making certain sounds, paired with the ease in which they seem to transition into male tones. It is believed that they are a man simply impersonating a female. Even though multiple people seem to be involved in this intricate scheme, bagmen and petty criminals spread out among the world, it is believed that the originator of this scheme is the unidentified caller. They are likely the one that does all of the necessary legwork, researching Hollywood projects, learning how to impersonate high-level executives, communicating with the victims, arranging travel and the transfer of funds, etc. If so, they must be spending close to every waking minute on some aspect of this scam. Nicolette Katsianis, a senior director with K2 Intelligence, has been spearheading a private investigation into this case since 2017. That was when Hollywood executives started to realize that they were being impersonated by someone. Nicolette quickly realized that this wasn't a simple scam operated by a large group of people. This was likely a scheme orchestrated by someone with obsessive tendencies, who went above and beyond in their approach to not only scam people out of money, but their dignity and sense of self-worth as well. Speaking to Vanity Fair last August, she stated, quote, "We are really only dealing with one person. There are the helpers in Indonesia who collect the target's money, but we have a really, really strong degree of certainty that this has been one person who played many roles, male and female, furnished the documents, designed the approach, and tailored it to each individual victim and person they're impersonating. There have been some victims who have months-long back-and-forth communications. Sometimes it goes into writing a screenplay, and there will be notes and storyboarding sessions, and really intense work put into it, all in facilitation for money getting exchanged in Indonesia. But a lot more effort went into these instances than have probably been necessary to get that money. It is believed that the scammer continues to touch base with their victims long after they have been drained of their assets, hinting at this not only being a money-making scheme, but a bizarre obsession for the scammer. Paired with the dozens of times that this individual has attempted to solicit phone sex from young men, it paints the portrait of an unusual individual who is likely mentally deranged and obsessed with entertainment culture. In an article published in Marie Claire just a couple of months ago, in February of 2020, Nicolette Katsianis indicated that there may be hundreds of victims that have yet to be identified. Men and women that are either unaware that they fell prey to a long-running scam that has ensnared countless others, or are too embarrassed to come forward. Those that do have information are urged to contact the FBI and fill out their questionnaire, so that this individual can eventually be brought to justice. Until such a time that the mysterious con queen of Hollywood is unmasked and identified, this story will remain unresolved. Thank you for listening to this episode of Unresolved. This is a story that I've wanted to cover for a while, and even though it's a rather short episode, I'm honestly glad that I did. It's not a typical true crime story, but it's a bizarre mystery that's fascinated me for quite a while. I've debated making this an episode of my other podcast, Hoax, but the mysterious angle of it really makes it more of an unresolved story in my opinion. Nonetheless, I'll be cross-posting this episode on the Hoax feed, so that listeners of that show can get some new content for the first time in a while. I'm actually hoping to bring Hoax back once I get some more free time in the coming months, which should hopefully be soon. Fingers crossed. Anyhow, before I boogie, I would like to thank the producers of Unresolved, who support the show each month through Patreon. These wonderful people are Maggie James, Roberta Jansen, Ben Crocombe, Quill Carter, Peggy Ballarda, Laura Hannon, Damian Moore, Amy Hampton, Scott Meese, Stephen Wilson, Scott Patzold, Marie Vangland, Astrid Nyer, Lori Rodriguez, Victoria Reed, Gabriella Bromley, Jessica Yount, Aimee McGregor, Danny Williams, Sue Kirk, Sarah Moscarotolo, Thomas Ahern, Sydney Scotton, Marion Welsh, Seth Morgan, Alyssa Lawton, Kelly Jo Hapgood, Patrick Loxo, Meadow Landry, Rebecca Miller, Tatum Bautista, Michelle Guess, and Joe Wong. Thank you all so, so much. And thank you all for listening. It truly means a lot, and I sincerely appreciate all of you taking the time to do so. It really means the world to me, so thank you. I'll be back with another unresolved story next week, but until then, stay safe, stay healthy, and if you can, please stay home, at least for now. I'll talk to you all later.